Yeah, Monday. Monday after the markets had their worst week in 2 years. Or was it? Chuck and Anna Finance brought to you by IIE Financial. IIE Financial willing the good of another. Visit us online, IIEfinancial.com, or call the offices today, 832-953-4998. That's 832-953-4998. I am your host, Chuck Folkerson, joined by the much better looking, and I have to say that because she's my bride, Annie Folkerson. How are you, dear?
Doing really well this week.
I love how I say, how are you? Like, I haven't been talking to you, you know, 26 hours a day.
Yeah, well.
It's just how we roll.
That's how we roll.
So, you know, we are in the midst of Super Bowl weekend. Super Bowl is going to, we're recording the show before the Super Bowl. So either someone's listening to the show today on a Monday, they're either way, way happy or way, way sad.
They are. And we just asked Alexa, who's going to win the Super Bowl, Alexa?
Yeah, if you ask Alexa, she says, Patriots are favored, but I want the Eagles to win. So Alexa is favoring the Eagles. Now, I will tell you, growing up as a kid, I was a huge Eagles fan. And I was an Eagles fan growing up as a kid. I lived in Pittsburgh, but I was an Eagles fan because I was a humongous fan of Randall Cunningham. Randall Cunningham was like my favorite athlete of all time.
Really hard to get memorabilia for Randall Cunningham.
Well, you know, he was right in my wheelhouse, and he was the most exciting quarterback in the league when I was a kid, in my opinion. I loved watching him play, and that was really like my thing. And then I remember it was like the first game of the season against the Green Bay Packers in 1991, I think it was, and I think that a guy's name was Bryce Pop, and he came in and blew Randall's knee out. And all my friends made fun of me because I was the only Eagles fan in my school. Mind you, I grew up in Pittsburgh. So I personally would like to see the Eagles win for my sentimental value, as well as for the simple fact that I hate the Patriots. And I'm sorry to all of my listeners in Boston and all of the people that love us in New England, but I just can't. I can't root. So we'll see what happens. No surprise. Depending on what happens as far as the game goes. So hope everybody had a good Super Bowl, watching it, enjoying it, and hopefully not gambling on it. So let's talk about the markets. Last week, we had the biggest movement to the downside in the markets in over 2 years.
Yeah, and biggest weekly move.
The biggest weekly move in over two mm-hmm. years in the markets, and people are losing their minds.
Yeah, the Dow closed at 666.
Points down.
Points down.
666. The mark of the beast! The mark of the beast. No, but the Dow Jones did slip about 2.5% in a day, and we had gone, I want to say it was a couple of hundred days without even a 1% move in the S&P, and we get 2.5% kapow, just like that. And really, what stemmed that? You know, what brought us to the brink in that 2.5% move? You know, as it came down. I mean, and we lost. It was the biggest weekly decline actually since 2008 when it shed 1,800 points in a week. Huge moves. Huge moves. The other thing that went up is that we saw a humongous increase in the VIX, the volatility index. For those that don't know what the VIX is, the VIX essentially is a fear gauge in the market, and it measures the fear that investors have that the markets are going to fall. So there was a whole lot of news happening, but interestingly enough, and you mentioned this a bit earlier, there's a lot of headlines that said, uh-oh, the bull market's over, the bull market's over, and a lot of headlines that were just don't worry. It's kind of like a schizophrenic headline cycle.
Yeah, you look at even just on the same websites, you'll see headline after headline after headline, just right one after another, and some said, don't panic, we're still in a bull market. Other articles said, sell, you know, completely get out, this is the end of the world, you know. It was pegged from one end of the spectrum all the way to the other end of the spectrum. And, you know, I think that that's very much reflected in our huge rise in the VIX. We're at 17.39 on the VIX, and we were at below 10 before.
Right. So huge, huge increase in the VIX and
in the fear gauge of the market. Yeah. And I think which one thing is interesting as well is that we've talked before about sector rotation and, you know, in different sectors in the market. And The fall in the market on Friday actually touched all 11 sectors. There wasn't really anywhere to, you know, that wasn't affected by this.
There was no place
nowhere to run.
Hide.
Nowhere to run. All 11 sectors were down. All major indices were down. You know, like we said, the Dow was down, shed more than 1,000 points for the week. The S&P 500 was down as well. The NASDAQ was down. And so everything was down, but there were some things that were up. We just mentioned the VIX was up. Bond yields were up.
Right. Now, bond yields are going to be up when we see the bond prices fall.
Exactly.
So there's right. that correlation of the yields are going to go when the prices fall. But that rising of the bond yields and the bonds continuing to fall is a large part of what scared the crud out of the market.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what my gut tells me is that last week was a profit taking. Like, people were taking profits. And when that profit taking began, and I spoke to a couple of investors that were scared. They really were. And they said, is this it? Is this the top? And my gut feeling says no. My gut feeling says that that was a profit-taking decline. And you've got to remember that when the market is as high as it is, a 300-point move in the market is 1%.
I don't even think, we didn't even erase the gains that we have in January, right?
No, we didn't erase all of January's gains. No, we erased a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But we didn't erase all of January's gains. And January was a humongous month. I think that this mm-hmm. could just giving you good opportunities for setups for what can happen in the future.
Yeah. And I thought one thing was interesting too, when I was reading on, different interviews with different traders who were actually on the floor of like the CBOE and stuff like that, we're talking about how this was just a normal day in the market. There was no panic. It was just, you know, just another day at the office, so to speak.
Yeah, if you look at a chart, and I'm always looking at price charts, and when you look at a price chart of kind of what happened throughout the day, there was no single, I'll call it a one-hour capitulation, where the market just completely fell off a cliff. I mean, it went down the whole day, and really it fell worse in the afternoon than it did early in the day. But if anybody,
do you think that's because retail investors started piling on and panicking?
Well, I think that's a large part of it. But the other part is, and I say this, people just don't want to hold something over the weekend as the markets are falling. They don't want to hold it over the weekend as the markets fall. Mm-hmm. And so if they don't want to hold it over the weekend as the markets fall, they say, okay, I'm not holding this thing. I don't know what's going to happen over the weekend. I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And they get out, and they don't, because they bail. And there's a lot of people say, you know what? I'm up already 4% for the year, 5% for the year, just based on what happened in January. I just gave a 1.5% back today, 2% back today. I'm going to close this thing out just in case we continue to fall, and maybe I'll jump back in a bit later.
Mm.
And I think you get a lot of people that are doing that, and they're taking profits at the end of the day on a Friday. And I think that's really where the end of the day sell-off came from. But I can see why the traders said that it wasn't, that it was an orderly decline, right? It was, everybody moved to the exits in an orderly fashion.
Mm.
And that's kind of what happened. Even when I look at like a 15-minute chart, there's not one big red candle, right? One big movement in those 15 minutes. It's all fairly contained and fairly controlled over the period. Now, they just happen to be a lot more down than up. And that really gives me hope that we're going to fall down into a potential accumulation point, if you will, and a chance to really get into more of those positions that have frankly been really hard to get into. It's been a bear being able to get into good market opportunities as we have gone up and up and up and up, because nobody wants to buy the all-time high.
Right, because as people who, you know, look at the overall economy, we're looking at different sectors, we are looking at, you know, fundamentals and things like that, but we are heavily technical traders. And so we're always looking for those fair price areas because to be able to get into the market. And just like if listeners don't understand what that means, if we think about our own selves going shopping, we don't want to buy, we would like to look for a sale. Right. If we have the opportunity to buy something on sale, more than likely we're going to go ahead and buy that item on sale. And so when we're looking at stocks, we're doing the same thing. We're looking to buy at a fair price area where we can buy stocks at a discount or on sale, so to speak. And when the market's rocketing upwards, it's not giving us those fair price areas.
Yeah, we don't have really an opportunity to buy when we're going straight up. But I think that now, I mean, in reality, the market today is sitting at 2762. That's where the S&P 500 is sitting right now. And that's really what we look at, is the S&P. It's sitting at 2762. It got as high as 28.72. So we're about 110 points off of the high. 27.62 is the number that we where we currently sit. I believe that there's all the opportunity in the world that will continue to fall down to around 2,700. Down at about 2,700 is where there is that fair price value area in the S&P. So if you wanted to be a little bit more aggressive, maybe what you do is you don't get back in, or you're already out, and maybe you re-engage the markets in those areas, because that's where a turning point may exist. Now, we're talking a little bit about market timing here, and that's really, you know, at our core is finding those turning points. And those turning points can be found on very, very small time frames, or they can be found on larger time frames for more of an investment style. The key is that you have a plan and that you know what your style is going to be. And if you don't know what your style is going to be, you got to learn it. You got to be able to build your plan. You got to be able to look inside of what your risk tolerances are, what your plan's going to be, and what you're lined up for. Number one thing is, don't overreact in a bad market and don't overreact in a good market. There's no reason to overreact one way or the other. And the most important thing is to follow the plan that you have set up at hand. If you've got any questions on that, you want to learn a little bit more about it, give the offices a call, 832-953-4998, or shoot us an email, chuck@iiefinancial.com. So let's talk a little bit about the news, and we always want to start our news headlines by looking at our news of the weird. But this is a unique headline, and I really want to bring this up because in today's world, society's different today. It is. We are in a different place in society, and we're not in a place where competitors in a beauty contest should be judged on the size of their lips, on the size of their cheeks, on the sides of their heads, or on the size of their knees.
Okay? Or how tall they are.
Or how short they are. Hashtag me too. Okay? We should not be objectifying camels. This is awesome. So Sky News, this is an article from Sky News. It says, camels banned from beauty contest after being injected with Botox. Competitors are judged on the size of their lips, cheeks, heads, and knees. Let's go ahead and start with the obvious. A camel beauty contest.
Oh, yes. This is an area in Saudi Arabia has been rocked by scandal.
Rocked by scandal. Firestorm of controversy.
Mm-hmm. After 12 ships of the desert, as they're called, were disqualified because their owners had used Botox.
Well, and the best part is that this is called this is the Miss Camel contest.
It is.
Prize money for the Miss Camel contest runs into millions of pounds, which is like tens of millions of dollars. But it makes some people want to cheat.
Yeah.
And this is I would like to everybody start. This is a beauty contest.
For camels.
Mm-hmm. And my favorite part is that they look at the size of the knees. They look at the knees. Now, I will tell you, I've had camel's milk chocolate. Have you had camel's milk chocolate?
Yeah.
It's smooth.
When we went to Abu Dhabi and Dubai.
It's a little too creamy for me. All right? It's a little too creamy for me. But I would imagine that if you use Botox, then they would be even creamier.
Oh.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I just shivered a little.
You just shivered a little. That's awesome. And I will tell you, the picture of the camel on here looks like you could take his lips and just go. I really want to do that to those camel's lips. I mean, look at them. They're amazing.
It is impressive. But this is for real. I mean, there's a month-long festival celebrated in Rumah, which is 160 kilometers east of Riyadh. It's a month-long festival that where there's camel milk tastings and camel rides, and there's this beauty contest, Miss Camel beauty contest, and all kinds of different things to highlight the history of the camels in the region.
Well,
so
we put a tweet out of that picture just so everybody could look at it. The tweet is live. You need to go see it.
It's legendary. I think driving through you know, that the area we spent some time there for work some years ago, and it is pretty amazing to see camels just in the wild,
just hanging like out, that. Just yeah. hanging out,
because like, you don't experience that obviously in the United States.
Yeah, so. It's just it's no big deal.
Yeah,
they're like it's like oh look, there's a deer. No, look, that's a camel.
Yeah.
So I find that to be a very interesting story, and a story that, you know, we need to stand up for those camels. Okay, they shouldn't need they're beautiful without Botox.
They need their own voice.
They need their own one voice. But they watch out, they spit. I learned that in Aladdin. Be careful! Right. Watch out, they spit.
Watch out, they spit. All right.
So what's our other headlines?
I don't even know how to segue from camels into cryptocurrency, other than the fact that they start with a C. They both begin with a C. But
hashtag cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I am not creative enough to segue from camels into cryptocurrency.
But Bitcoin is banking.
Oh man, they are, and I really wanted to talk about that today, because when we had first started talking about this several months ago, Bitcoin was at $20,000 or $20,000, you know, value.
Right. It was trading at 20.
And now it's down to 8, and there's been tremendous profit taking on this. And digital currencies have quickly grown into a more mainstream asset class over the last 2 years. However, there are major banks and financial institutions and companies that are now throwing up the red flag, and they don't want to be caught, so to speak, catching a falling knife.
Right.
The JP Morgans, Bank of America, Citigroups of the world, they have come out just over this last week and said that they are no longer going to be allowing purchases on credit cards. I think they're still allowing, some of them are still allowing debit cards, but they're not allowing credit card transactions with cryptocurrencies.
And that's a big deal for people, because a lot of them have been using credit cards to fund it, which, by the way, I don't necessarily agree with using credit cards to fund investments, but how else do you get the money into these coin banks? Right. You've got to actually, and most people don't, I'm guessing that most people that are investing in cryptocurrencies have never written a check in their lives. Right. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but you don't want to send them a paper check.
It's just antiquated technology.
Yeah. And there are some people,
paper checks.
And there are some, and I think I read an article recently that Chase Bank will not accept a deposit from any cryptocurrency broker. Mm-hmm. So even if you have a Chase Bank account and you're trading cryptos and you try to take the money, they won't accept the deposit. Mm-hmm. They also want you to send money to them. So this is, and think about the banks for a minute. This is the banks saying, no, you can't pee in our pool. That's really what this is. In my mind, this is the banks saying, listen, free market, you're peeing in our pool where we've had control over the currency and where the currencies are and what they're doing. See, because relatively, anybody can start up a cryptocurrency. You get the miners.
You can, you
get the
Bitcoin. I think that's a good point, because the name Bitcoin comes up a lot. However, there's over 1,500 different cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, Bitcoin's
just one
right now.
Of them.
Yep.
And so the
my favorite
rise...
was Banana Coin. By the way, it was literally backed by 1 kilo of bananas.
I think the problem too is that crypto jacking. That's a term now, you know, crypto jacking.
Is that like carjacking?
Yeah, it is.
Helicopter jacking?
Yeah, exactly.
Crypto jacking.
Cyber criminals are taking over, computer users' browsers and mining cryptocurrencies. And a lot of this, like, it's such wild and far out there technology for so many people that I think that there's a large percentage of the population that really doesn't even understand how the cryptocurrencies work. And so if investors are thinking about, you know, getting into this, there's so many levels of complexity to understand them before anybody really, I think, should jump into it. It's all about education, I think.
Yeah, and that's what it is. You've got to understand the risks that you're taking when you get in. And this is, And I will tell you, I've been slow to adopt Bitcoin. As somebody who looks at the markets every day, I have no problem identifying opportunities in futures or in currencies or in Forex or in options or whatever. I've been really slow to get into Bitcoin. And my biggest fear with Bitcoin has not been the validity of the asset class itself. My biggest fear has been regulatory yeah. bodies coming in saying, we can't have this. And then you can't get your money out. Mm-hmm. See, that's my bigger fear. My bigger fear isn't that I'm missing a great opportunity. It's that I can't get to my money when I want to. That's really my biggest fear, is that you put your money into this account, it grows, and then you can't get it out. And then what do you do?
Right.
Because there are some banks that, you know, they're just not interested in allowing any transactions to come with it. And I understand banning credit crypto purchases. I do understand that, right? Because if you're really trying to make sure that people aren't, because you can't fund a trading account, you can't fund an IRA with a credit card.
On a credit card,
right?
Of course.
So I can completely understand that. I don't really have a problem with that. However, I do have a problem if they're going to stop you from a debit card or from writing a check. And that, to me, is the bank saying, don't pee in our pool, and we are the ones that control the currency, and so stay away.
Yeah, by the same token, there are other non-financial institutions and corporations. Facebook is one of them, who's
right.
very anti-cryptocurrency. Why do you think that companies like that, you know, they're not banks. I mean, they're huge. They're part of our, you know, the FANG stocks. But what do you think?
I think that for Facebook, it's more about it's the cybersecurity thing. And I think that it's more about having the air of, especially with what's going on with the government and Russia and Facebook and hacking and the election and all that stuff. Facebook's trying to go over the top with protecting the end user to make sure that cyber criminals aren't getting in through that site. I really think that's really more of what it is than anything, is reputation protection. And that's where I think that comes in. But from as far as the banks go, the banks, the government, it's all about how do I control the currency that we already have? And there's a lot of threat. I mean, the down movement we've seen in cryptos has really come from South Korea coming out and saying no more cryptocurrency. And that's really where most of it was being exchanged. A lot of it was being exchanged there. And so I think that if people are, if they want to get involved in it, if they say, I got to get in, I got to jump in, when everybody starts talking about it, it's time to leave. And that's what happened. If you remember, we, you know, 6 weeks ago, everybody said, I missed out on Bitcoin. I missed out on Bitcoin, and everybody wanted to buy. When everybody wanted to buy, it's time to run, right? The market,
pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered.
Amen to that. And the market is going to react much the same way. The market, you know, the stock market too. When everybody wants to get in, maybe it's time to start pulling some money off the table. Maybe it's time to start looking at other opportunities and looking at other investments and seeing what are the other things to do. And that's why we always go back to having a plan. What's your down market strategy, right? What's your strategy that if the market does take a 40, 50% correction, that you're going to be protected, that you're not going to have that kind of exposure? You've got to leave some wiggle room for pullback, no doubt at all, right? I mean, I didn't have a, in my investment accounts, we didn't make money this week. You're not going to. In a down market, you're going to lose money. But you shouldn't lose too much. And you should know where's your line in the sand on where you're going to get out and where you're going to protect yourself. Now, we're going to carry on a little bit, but this is kind of a short podcast this week because what we're going to do something a little bit different. We're gonna end the normal podcast this week, but we've actually got a separate podcast we're going to put out. So we're putting them both out at the same time, which is actually kind of fun. We've got some interviews with some congressional candidates here in Texas, District 2.
Yeah, midterm elections are right around the corner. Early voting starts February 20th, and Texas is actually the first state in the union to start their midterm elections. And so we invited all 14 candidates for the U.S. House of Representatives in our district to come on the show. And so we have the first three that we will be sharing their interviews with you.
Yeah, so that'll actually be in a separate podcast. We'll actually title it appropriately. So this one's going to be a bit shorter than normal because it's really one podcast split into two, if you will. But not everybody's going to be interested in that because maybe not everybody lives in District 2 in Texas. But we thought that we would split it up out there so that you guys had it. So if you have any questions, please, 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 as always, feel free to reach out. You are always welcome to find us online, IIEfinancial.com. Shoot me an email, chuck@IIEfinancial.com, or give the office a call, 832-953-4998. until next time, I will see you next week.
IIE Financial is an investment advisor representative with Symphony Financial, a registered investment advisor. Charles Fulkerson is an investment advisor representative with IIE Financial and Symphony Financial, LTD Co. Annie Fulkerson is not registered nor affiliated with Symphony Financial. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Symphony Financial. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. IIE Financial does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance.